Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hi everyone, this conversation was recorded before new measures, which constantly are changing around theatres being open or not, so please go and see Courtney Act's show when it is open again. It may even be open at the time of this going out, because as we may have noticed, things are changing pretty quickly around here. Sounded like I was about to break into song. Listeners, hello, how are you? Welcome to Homo Sapiens. What have I got to tell you other than some rather exciting news? We have got none other than Courtney Act on the show today. Courtney Act, you will know who Courtney Act is from Drag Race and from British Celebrity Big Brother, among many other things, including their sort of bisexual version of Love Island, the bi life. But also, like, Courtney's real name is Shane Jenick. And we are going to be chatting to Shane about being Courtney, being Shane, and so many things sort of that come in between. Because what I love about Shane is that he has been on a journey of what part of him is Courtney Act and what part of him is Shane. And it's sort of fascinating to talk to somebody who has spanned from being on Australian Idol as a drag act all the way through to now, where drag is so mainstream. Sort of Shane's career is almost like a barometer for how drag has changed. And I'm really interested to hear more about that. Also because I've heard him talk so much about all those kind of realizations about being gender fluid, being pansexual. Many moments of realization that he speaks about really beautifully. He is in a West End show in London's West End at the moment. The show is called Death Drop. It is a very sort of irreverent drag take on Agatha Christie murder mystery with Monet Exchange and many other drag artists. It's loads of fun. So if you are looking to have a good socially distanced night out, they're all prepared for all the socially distanced stuff and COVID friendly, you get your temperature taken on the door, go look it up, go book some tickets. It's been selling out, it's had rave reviews. So very exciting indeed. Now, before we chat to Shane, I'm going to remind you that we love to hear from you as well. So always get in touch. Hello at homosapienspodcast.com, on Instagram at Homo Sapiens, on Facebook at Homo Sapiens Podcast. Please leave us a review on Apple Podcasts as well. They are ultra helpful. And my favourite one wins a t-shirt, bada bing. And if you don't want to win one, you can buy one. You can even buy a sweater, which, by the way, when we did a poll on Instagram, everyone loves the sweaters. So go to everpress.com/homosapiens. You can buy one of those. But that's enough of the sales pitch. Let's talk to Shane, a.k.a. Courtney Act. Thank you so much for doing this at the end of a day of rehearsal. How has it been going?
It's good. I've been just working, I guess, for a live house during these times is quite peculiar. Mm. It's normally, I don't know, 1,000 seats and there's like 250 available each night. But to be in like such a big space with a sold out audience that's only a quarter full, yeah, is like a bit of a mind fuck for a live performer, because you're, yeah, like, it's just built in that you've failed. Even though it's sold out.
Yeah, that's interesting, isn't it?
So overcoming that is a challenge.
And who is your crowd in these days?
The audience is pretty varied. Like on Sunday matinee, I think we had a bit of a West End crowd. Mm-hmm. And I say that because when I came on stage, there was silence. Monet Exchange, who has also been on RuPaul's Drag Race, and I are in the show. And so when we walk through the door, it's often a crowd of like Drag Race fans. So when we walk through the door, people are like, "Ah!" And there's that like, "Oh, thank you, thank you." And then, of course, you come to expect it. And then you walk out on Sunday matinee and there's crickets and you're like,
"Oh, no." So what, that sort of people who work locally and sort of go and see each other's shows, but it's not...
No, I think it was more like a West End, like people who go to see West End shows crowd.
I see, right.
I think. They were sort of laughing at all the right places structurally, but they weren't laughing at the... There's not many in-jokes as far as like Drag Race in-jokes go, but there's a lot of like absurd humor that they weren't laughing at as much as sort of like the structured humor.
Yes, because I suppose there is, you know, one of the things that besets theater in the UK, but all over the world, is, you know, it's pretty exclusive and it's very expensive. And it's a lot of whenever I ever go to a theatre, like it's a lot of older white people. Mm. And, you know, for anyone who...
They were basically a Tory audience who were in, which is funny because one of the characters, he's called Rich Whiteman. and he's played by a drag king performer, Louis Cypher. And I'm not entirely sure. I think for the first half, the audience were like, "Oh, yes, 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 I agree with you. Yes, also bloody immigrants." And then in Act Two, when some revelations about the characters' misgivings become revealed, I feel like there was a moment where the audience were like, "Look, oh, we've been hoodwinked. He's really? A puff." I think they were like, "Oh, finally, we're being represented on the West End stage again. You know, white conservative people, it's about time we had some representation."
It's funny that, isn't it? Because how do you, as a drag performer, like, how do you bring those people on board? Because I'm thinking about when we interviewed Julian Clary a long, long time ago, and we were talking about, you know, how progressive Julian Clary was at the time and used to do, like, in the 80s, like go in like a pink latex onesie on panel shows and stuff. Yeah. And but what he said is that he used to try and get there first. Like he would try and he would get people on stage and go through their handbags and stuff to try and sort of undercut them in some way. But I thought that was an interesting approach. But how do you do it?
I mean, it depends on what I'm doing. I suppose in this show, it's a play that's written. So there's only so much I can do night to night. Mm. But normally in my shows, it's interesting because if I'm doing a show that people have booked to come and see, they're coming to see me. So the audience is already on my side. But then you'll do things like Edinburgh Fringe. Mm. You'll do some like gala night or something where it's just people who have come to see a variety show. And I've got like a slot that essentially is promotion for my show. But I always forget. And I just click back. There's just that instinctive moment when you walk out on stage and you're like, "Oh, these aren't my people." They're not hostile, but you just go back to, did you see the Hannah Gadsby Nanette
yes.
show? Mm. When she said, when she talks about self-deprecation, and she says, "It's not humility, it's humiliation. I put myself down in order to create a space for me to speak." Mm. And she says, "I'm not willing to do that anymore to, you know, when you come from a marginalized community." And it is that thing that I think I learned from touring with like the Lay Girls, who are a sort of famous troupe of Australian trans women who pioneered queer performance in the 60s and 70s in Australia, very mainstream, family friendly. And it was all very like, "Where do you put it? Open your mouth and I'll show you." Mm. Sort of comedy that involves a lot of like penis humor and self-deprecating sort of humor at their expense. And yeah, I just remember like walking on stage in Edinburgh and doing those old jokes of like 36, 26, 36, 8.5 and sort of, you know, chatting to the straight man and I guess, yeah, making myself the target before they could sort of thing, which isn't necessarily the healthiest thing, as Hannah Gadsby has pointed out, but it is sort of like that default flight or fight almost that just clicks in when you realize you're in that environment.
Yeah, and it's really fascinating that, isn't it? Because you are sort of used to doing that. And I think drag is such a kind of barometer for where the world is at. Do you feel that you would do that less now?
Well, one thing that I do love, which I've noticed, especially I think it could be moving to the UK, it could be winning Celebrity Big Brother, and it could be the time that we're currently living in. But I've definitely noticed that that is not as common these days, especially in a professional environment, like in television, if I'm on a panel show or something like that. Whereas before, and I've felt this feeling on Australian television many times, where it's sort of like, it's a man in a dress. Oh,
yes.
That doesn't happen anymore. And it was actually palpable and shocking to me when I realized. I was like, I feel like a human now. I don't feel like a sideshow act. I feel like I'm invited here and respected and listened to and understood. And I can still make a dick joke if I want to, but I'm not required to in order to create a space for myself.
Yeah, it's funny, isn't it? It's like you're not a freak. Mm. That's not your central gag almost.
Yeah. That's a lovely place to be quite honest, because I love drag and I love performance, but it's kind of like any performer who goes on stage sort of, or anybody who goes on television gets hair and makeup done to them.
Mm.
My hair and makeup just happens to be a different gender to the one that I'm expected to appear as, I suppose,
yeah.
Which did make it sort of that freak element. But in a way, it also carved out a space that people were staring long enough that they now treat me with respect most of the time. So
yeah, and it's like, because that was one of the things I wanted to talk to you about actually, is that your career has kind of broadly spanned, I mean, you know, listen, RuPaul's been around forever, but like, you know, has spanned drag going from fringe to ultra mainstream.
Mm.
And I wondered how that had changed your act. And I suppose part of it is that you don't feel you need to send yourself up.
Yeah. And I think I've always wanted to talk about stuff. I've always wanted to talk about topics of interest, whether that be, I love gender and I love sexuality. I love talking about the nuances of that. And I love talking about politics or the environment or art or whatever it is, but talking with some depth and some interest. But that wasn't really ever afforded because it was always a bit more slapsticky.
Mm.
To now have a place where, you know, I'm invited on a BBC panel show to comment on Brexit and the NHS in drag with nobody batting an eyelid just tickles me to no end.
Yeah.
And I like that. And I love like getting down and dirty and talking about things.
When you've done a panel show and you've gone in full drag, you're on as Courtney, right? But
it's just me with more hair and makeup though. It's like, I'm sure Kim Kardashian and I spend a similar amount of time getting ready and probably do the same things to our body. She just doesn't tuck.
I was thinking about Katie Price and Jordan. Mm-hmm. I suppose there's a parallel there, isn't there?
Yeah. Jordan and Katie Price are sort of extreme in a way. But I think Gemma Collins is kind of extreme, but I was watching her on
God, I love her.
CBBC Celebrity Supply Teacher, I did an episode of, and she was on the same season.
I'm so excited about that.
And she's there absolutely barefaced talking about this character, Gemma, that she plays on television and sort of like talked through the fourth wall in a way, which was interesting. But even like, say, Kylie, you know, she's not sitting at home in hair and makeup. She's just in clothes like the rest of us, and then she gets tarted up for promo. And I think that's how I feel Courtney is in a way, but I think people definitely respond to me maybe slightly more drastically than Kylie in pajamas and Kylie in hair and makeup, because one I'm a boy and the other I'm a girl. And so particularly like the straight men and the straight presenters certainly treat me a different way as Courtney.
Really? What is that difference?
They treat me like a woman, like an attractive, blonde, leggy woman. Like it's beyond their intellectual comprehension. It's got to do with their biology. And so as much as they want to think their way out of it, their biology is responding to a visual that makes things, you know, blood flow and hormones. I'm not like, not even like saying that, not saying all straight men want to have sex with me.
But they're only human.
But I think there is certainly something in our, you know, in our biology and our chemistry that like makes you respond to like that image, which is, I think, part of the reason why I do it. But also part of it is just because I enjoy it. But I think there's something, there's, although I kind of look like a woman, there's something subversive about certainly not being a woman and presenting that way.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Do you feel like drag is the canary in the mine for what we demand of women's bodies at any given time in the world? Because there's this sort of, you know, there's this sort of burgeoning scene, which I'm sure has been around for longer than I know, but like that slightly more messy drag queen, and it's more like body hair and stuff like that. And do you, because you've spoken before about how Courtney was almost trying to subvert body image stuff. So how do you feel, because sometimes you're pandering to the stereotypes, but that's not what you wanted to do, and it's complicated.
Yeah, it's weird, because by subverting the unrealistic beauty expectations, I actually just reinforce them. And there's an interesting theory, which I'll try and get right, that goes something along the lines of, if you look at, let's take the Kardashians as a example of modern femininity and unrealistic beauty standards. The people who do their hair and makeup and styling, and all of these like women, our J-Lo's and these sort of like glamorous women of this era, most of their teams of hair and makeup artists and stylists are gay men. And a lot of those gay men, you know, we grew up with being influenced by drag and by trans performers, and a lot of that influence, like contouring, and you know, drag queens have been doing that for 20 plus years, and it's just something the Kardashians have started doing. That sort of stage and theater makeup to sort of restructure bones, and also, you know, people of color tend to use contouring, women tend to use contouring more to give, you know, depth to darker skin tones and things like that as well. But there's sort of this theory that sort of gay men are creating these pop stars in their own mind's eye image of femininity. And if you look at the female pop stars of today, they are more like drag queens than they have ever been. It, to the point where for a long time, if I was dressing for the male gaze, I used to wear a lot less makeup, a lot less hair, a lot less everything. But now I feel emboldened by the beauty standards of pop culture to still dress for the male gaze and be over the top with hair and makeup.
Wow.
I was on the set of the Little Mix music video Power that Willem Alaska and I were in, and I was looking at Jade from Little Mix, and her hair and makeup was just amazing. And she was wearing more hair and makeup than I had ever worn. And I pledged on that day forward that I would wear more hair. And I have ever since that day, my makeup and hair has been so, and I've been so much better for it. I love it. I'm like, oh, I don't need to be, I've leaned into the creativity and the fantasy of it all as well. But to sort of get back to that question of, is drag the canary in the coal mine? I don't know. It might be chicken and egg. I'm not sure. But it is fascinating to see. I mean, the Kardashian body isn't a body that has existed historically in pop culture. the only place I have seen that body historically is in the trans drag performers that I know from. I remember seeing a video of Candy Stratton, who's a Cher impersonator, trans woman, gave me this video back before YouTube that had all of these continental, Miss Continental pageant contestants in it. And these women had quite modified bodies of like silicone hips and breasts and like these hyper feminine sort of shapes that almost at the time could seem absurd. But now you look at a Kardashian or any, there's so many, it's not just them. I'm just using them, yes, as the signpost.
Yeah.
That their bodies are exactly that. And so, yeah, it's interesting to see. There's some women are like reclaiming their bodies how they want, and then others are becoming even more hyper.
Yeah, it's sort of making it extra, going extra on everything. Mm. And yeah, you'd spoken a bit about Australia and what it's like in... You grew up in Sydney, did you?
I grew up in Brisbane and I moved to Sydney when I was 18. So I call Sydney home, but technically Brisbane.
So your family are in Brisbane?
My family are... They moved to the mountains sort of near Byron Bay.
One thing I love about you is you have this lovely ease and lightness of touch about you, and you're so warm and kind. And I think, is that from your family? Is that your...
I think so. Whilst there was one type of man in the mainstream, I suppose, I was very fortunate to have a different type of man as my father. Yeah. And I've only realized this while writing my memoir, where... Writing a memoir is just like, I recommend everybody, even if no one's going to read it, just write it for your own mental clarity. But probably wait. Don't do it if you're in your 20s. Just wait.
Yeah, you need
to
wait.
It's still unfolding. The ink is still wet. I mean, I'm sure the ink is still wet now at 38. But yes. My dad, and I don't know, I think this is both a metaphor and actually a real lesson. My dad has a giant moustache, mm-hmm. like a moustache that attracted attention wherever we went. Mm. He just loved his moustache and people loved it, but it was very abnormal. But he just always had it. And so I never kind of noticed. And I just grew up with my dad happy being different. And I think he's quite comfortable in his... He never once did he expect me to be masculine. Never once did he try to butch me up or anything like that. And I didn't realize any of these things until writing it all down.
Mm.
Whilst I think there's different levels of, because I do have wonderful, loving parents who are very supportive. And the struggles that I've had sort of trying to understand my identity when I had two parents who loved me and made me feel wonderful. And that my sort of trauma and struggle comes from the outside world. And then I think some people don't have that primary safety net. So I feel very blessed. It gives me a lot of empathy, I think, in understanding other people and their own struggles, because I know how important that fundamental relationship, that primary caregiver relationship has been to me.
Mm.
And still how confusing I found things. But yeah, my dad was always this other example of masculinity, I think, that I just never realized. He was an acupuncturist and naturopath. Again, like not a normal job at all in Brisbane in the 80s.
Yeah.
He's just always been a man who like really comfortable being himself. When I came out, he told me that he once lived with 6 drag queens back in the 70s and been to sleazeball 1 year in drag.
And no.
It was like, this is my coming out story. but I love when Dad picks me up from the airport at the Gold Coast to drive me back to their place. We sort of sit in the car for an hour or so, and it's some of my favorite times just getting to hang out with Dad and chat. There's something that I love about a journey, like where you're sat in a car with somebody, you're trapped in a car, or even going walking. I used to love going on like walking dates, like dates to Runyon Canyon in LA, because if you didn't like the person, then at least you still got a hike in.
Yes.
But also it's like maybe it's an hour and a half and you're part of your focus is occupied doing a task, but you're still quite engaged in talking. And I think in some weird way, it's almost like you've had a few drinks, like your defense is a little bit down because you're trying to navigate a rocky path, but you're also talking deep and meaningful.
It makes it less intense, doesn't it? Like, it sort of takes the edge off it. I also think, because I always loved that, my mum, whenever she was having troubles with us as a kid, like, she would drive us somewhere and sort mm-hmm. of bring things up on the drive. Mm. And I think it's the lack of eye contact as well. Mm. Like, I think not having to look at each other is less confrontational. You can float something. You're not worried about the reaction. It can float back in, you know. This is something I really want to talk to you about, is celebrity supply teacher. Because... Oh, yeah. It's like, it's a CBBC show, right?
Yeah. 20 years ago, in the year 2000, my first job on telly, in the mainstream, was as a kids' TV show host. And we filmed one day a month. We filmed four episodes in a day. It was a Saturday night show. Four episodes in a day. And then I had the other 29 or 30 days of the month off. And that was when I discovered drag. Actually, it was 2001 because I went to the 2001 Diva Awards in drag. I was wearing a little blue sparkly payette dress that I bought from Myers, and a friend did my makeup. And my friend worked in television on like the Home Shopping Network doing makeup-y things. And he was like, you know, kid, this is television. The fact that you're going to this thing in drag is already bad enough. I can't believe I'm doing your makeup, but whatever you do, don't get photographed at this event. Because you work in kids' television and it's, we all know that doing drag is certainly not, it is mutually exclusive. Mm. And of course, a photograph of me ended up in the paper. And then that week I got the call that they weren't continuing with the show. And by the way, nice photo of you in the blue dress in the paper. And yeah, I lost my job hosting kids' TV, which interestingly, like, I'm not mad at them per se. I would have preferred that the world was a different place, but the world wasn't a different place then. So yeah. I don't have a grievance, say, with the individual or the company or anything like that. It's more looking back that I feel like, oh, that's unfortunate that the world was that place. But I would have given myself the same advice. I could also see that back then that being a drag queen wasn't appropriate to be a kids' TV show host. So it's weird where I'm like, wait, am I just taking on the oppressor's mindset, or am I being objective? But anyway, 20 years later, I get a call from Children's BBC to do an episode of Celebrity Supply Teacher on kindness and difference and acceptance. And it was so heartwarming to do, and particularly to watch back and to see the kids' questions, to have like a bunch of young kids asking, you know, knowingly with families, you know, having them knowingly ask a drag queen a question and then getting to answer that. I love it when you watch things back that you do and you're like, oh, I really like that. I did a good job there.
Yeah. It's so lovely. And that, you know, that thing, that saying we always come back to on this podcast is like, you've got to see it to be it. And having that in, having, if some kid wants to grow up and do drag, like it not be this thing that is for them lives on the margins and in dark places in nightclubs. It's something that they've seen from a young age because it's totally normal.
And I think even beyond doing drag, just about ownership of your own identity and defining yourself outside the status quo. And I think that's the other thing, is so often like what I do isn't about like recruiting people to do drag. It's about allowing people to express themselves however they want. And allowing them to understand that however they feel inside is correct.
Yeah, and that's an important distinction, actually. Well, now's the time to go and put on the kettle, because we've come to the end of part one with Courtney Act, aka Shane Jenick. I am having a whale of a time. I don't know about you lot, but go to your feed and look at part two, because it is released at the same time as part one. So click on that and have a listen.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Want your most burning finance and investing questions answered? Here's a podcast you should be listening to, courtesy of Acast Recommends.
Are you ready for some personality in your personal finances? Hi, I'm Janice Torres Rodriguez, Latina money expert and host of the award-winning podcast, Yo Quiero Dinero. On this show, we're serving up POC-friendly personal finance knowledge, always with a side of sass. We're not talking about avocado toast and lattes on this show. We've got real, relatable personal finance knowledge that makes you feel seen, heard, and finally understood. Consider me your super cool, slightly risque, but always honest financial fairy godmother. Together, we'll tackle dinero in a fresh new way so you can finally become poderosa with your dinero. Check out our weekly podcast episodes at YoQuieroDineroPodcast.com or subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Powered by Spirit Studios.